Please be aware there are spoilers in part one and part two of this review of Unsolved Mysteries from Netflix.
We cover many serious issues in this podcast. This discussion may contain reference to domestic violence, sexual violence, violence against children, suicide, drug use, or graphic depictions of death or dead bodies. It is not suitable for all audiences.
Tonight on Unsolved Mysteries Rewind, two friends get together to discuss episodes of their favorite television show, Unsolved Mysteries. Will they find answers? Will anyone care? You may be able to solve a mystery.
Hello, my name is Kim, and you are listening to Unsolved Mysteries Rewind. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Mark. Mark, how are you?
I'm doing great, Kim. I'm very excited to come off of this Netflix idea, this Netflix Unsolved Mysteries series that we jumped all over yesterday. Today, I just want to mention, we don't normally talk about dates, so we don't normally talk so much about current events, but yesterday, Unsolved Mysteries on Netflix was released.
And it was mixed reviews.
Well, I'd say mixed reviews in our circles. I feel that if you were to go through the Rotten Tomatoes crowd, which God forbid you use a site like that for reviews, you will see that it probably is across the board, probably pretty positive.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing.
Now, I watched five of these yesterday.
Holy moly.
I know. I was really going for it. I had my coffee and my Unsolved Mysteries Rewind coffee mug. I was like, I am here for this. But I'm like hot off the last one that I watched this morning. So how many did you watch?
Three. And I was only going to watch a half of one, to be honest with you. It was
Which
good.
Which ones did you watch?
I watched the episode where the first, the second, and the, on your suggestion, the fifth.
Yeah, the aliens.
Wait. Was there a French one?
Yeah.
Which one was that? Was that four?
Yeah.
I watched half of that, and it was really good, but I was tired. It was about 1 a.m.
It was so much reading, too. And I mean, you know, I've actually heard of that story before.
Oh, really?
It was the third.
I'm going to say right off the bat, I found that one the most, I hate to use this word in a situation where there's murder and stuff like this, but entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind subtitles because we're just complete geeks with foreign films and everything. And usually I leave the subtitles on because I find, just like me, the world is full of mumblers. So the podcast should have subtitles just for my part.
Well, I always watch everything with subtitles on too, but it was just a lot of reading. Mm. But so what do you think about the intro?
All right, so we have a new intro. There's a formula. It's what happens is it's almost like a sitcom in a little bit of a way. So you get the little taste of what the show is going to be about for about 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like King of Queens in that sense. No, it's not like King of Queens, but it has like your little taste of what the show is going to be about, a little synopsis, and then it goes into this intro. Now, before the intro, there's no disclaimer. There's no, which I feel as though is a part of the intro of the original series. This is not
a news broadcast.
Right. It's almost like releasing Star Wars without the crawl, you know, or the, Lucasfilm Presents type of thing. I missed that. I also feel as though it was, for their first episode, which was about the possibility of suicide, I feel as though there was a glaring omission of mentioning that not only is this possibly about suicide, but if you need somebody to help you in the event that you're depressed, here's the friggin' number. Now, I just feel, you know, Netflix, I mean, maybe it kind of passed through their censors. They're kind of a small company, right? And so I just thought it was a glaring omission.
Interesting.
And I'm not really sure why the decision was made. I'm going to guess the decision was consciously made to omit it.
Yeah, I could see them adding something at the end, too, if they don't want to, like, spoiler alert.
Oh, the end was
maybe this is about
terrible.
Suicide.
I hated the end crawl. I'm sorry.
No, I will say I love the intro. I think it was very creepy. In fact, I would say the intro is probably my favorite part of the new series of
I love the music. The music, I was very jealous of. I was like, oh, we have a cool intro on our podcast. But
yeah, I was like, our intro is way cooler. But I will say I thought it was cool that they kind of slowed it down. And then they show the guys on like the hazmat suits, like wrapping up a body from the dump.
Yeah.
And like there's the girl getting carried off in the woods, slumped over the guy's shoulder. Very creepy.
New logo. Yeah.
New logo. But what's controversial and what I don't like is the use of Robert Stack.
Oh, he's in there? I didn't know.
I have heard such mixed reviews about this. There's like a faint image of Robert Stack. And for the most part, people either love it or hate it. I saw people in my Unsolved Mysteries group that said that it brought tears to their eyes.
Really?
Yeah, that they start crying like, oh, this is so exciting that they include our guy Robert Stack. And obviously, there is no Unsolved Mysteries without Robert Stack. But here's my thing. It's its own standalone thing. It's not at all like how the old Unsolved Mysteries is. So why are you using Robert Stack? Did his family sign off on this in any way? I don't know. And also, if you're going to include Robert Stack, then why not throw a Farina in there? Why not throw, you know, like Raymond Burr or whoever else the other guys were? Like, why not? Why just Robert Stack?
You know, and here's my second Star Wars reference of the episode. you know, whenever you sometimes have a throwback like this, you have these little dream sequence things where, and that intro was very much like an X-Files type of mishmash of imagery and a collage of stuff. It was a real throwback to the late 90s. It really was. And it's kind of like where Unsolved Mysteries went towards the end of their run. And I just felt, you're right, they should have thrown Farina in there. Is Farina? I always think it's the name of a pet food, Farina.
Purina.
Yeah, it's, but, you know, he was a genuine big part of this. Was he a fan favorite? Maybe not. But he was a big part of it.
Exactly. It felt like such pandering to use Robert Stack. Like, I didn't care for that.
I do agree with you, but I think that it would have been nice, like in Star Wars, they'll throw in all of the other people who are in the movies and stuff like that and create this little collage for everyone. And it just, I mean, it's definitely they had to pay the estate of Robert Stack, I would imagine. They're using his imagery, unless they owned it. For me, the amount of money we're talking about with this company, I think it would be a shame if his family didn't, his estate didn't receive some type of residual for the use of his imagery. I mean, if he's that important to be in the intro, then they should be kicking back a few bucks.
I think so too. And
to us as well.
Well, I will say the biggest problem that I have with the whole thing overall is that it was so slow. Like, the one story format was not working for me. There was so much fat that they could trim. Like, if they did it where they had the first three stories in one episode and the next three in the next episode, I would probably be on board for this redo. But to me, it's just like Dateline or something.
I think that you will agree with me. The storytelling is really good. It's great, actually. It's as good as it gets when it comes to telling the entire story, laying it out, getting these really intimate details. But I wish we recorded this a week ago, because we were talking about what to expect, and I feel as though we predicted the future here.
100%.
You know, we said, well, I just thought drone footage. It's going to be drone footage. Everywhere drone footage. And I would say 60% of this entire production is drone footage. Even shots when they're walking and reenacting stuff, it's drone footage. If you, drone footage is, it looks great, but it's kind of like
beautiful.
It's like Jurassic Park CGI. It's just a little too, polished, in my opinion. You know, some people love it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, I totally do disagree with you on that. I thought it was beautiful, sweeping imagery, like very rich colors and everything. I loved looking at it. And like you said, the storytelling was great. The stories were compelling and everything. But I lost my train of thought.
No, well, I mean, I guess I've seen so much drone footage in my life, starting from the very beginning of like when drones could actually stabilize. And this stuff, I mean, they have the best drones in the world filming this stuff. It's all shot in probably 8K. It's beautiful. And it's shot and it's filmed by the brothers who brought us Stranger Things. So who better to create this? I did not get a feeling of, I didn't think that brought so much to the table. Mm-hmm. And maybe they didn't want it to.
Yeah, and I messaged you about this yesterday morning, but I just feel like it really took itself too seriously. I was missing the levity of, like, bad reenactments or, like, a missing heir story. And I don't even like those stories, but, like, this really took itself seriously, which, I mean, it should because we are talking about murder here.
Mm-hmm.
And it is already making some change because at least one of the murder investigations is officially reopened as of yesterday when they launched it.
Really?
So... yeah, it's and there
seems
are like
timely. Seems perfectly well, timed.
I know it's a lot of pressure. In fact, friend of the show Sherlock Holmes invited me yesterday to this like Facebook page called Justice for Patrice Endress, who is right. the second story that they cover. So it's like this is really gaining some traction, and I'm sure a lot of people are like putting pressure on the detectives and stuff like that now, but. We basically have six stories, and we're not going to go in as much detail as we normally do because they're so fresh, and we just want to run through and give you guys like what we thought of the main ones.
But before you go into it, I just want to say my only other criticism about the show, because I can't stop with my criticism, is there's droning music throughout the entire thing, and I think that adds to the seriousness of the issue. Now, I think when you say that there's everything is taken so seriously. I feel as though Unsolved Mysteries in general takes everything seriously, even back in the 80s and 90s. It's just, they would go through it so quickly that you could really get into it. In these stories, there's so much, personal storytelling going on that I feel as though, yeah, they're developing characters and there's something about it that just kind of leaves me with a feeling of dread. Now, I think that this, again, is a top-notch production. I think it's worth seeing. I think if you're a fan of true crime and learning of cases that might not have too much attention to it, Netflix hit the nail on the head. There's no doubt about it. I think it's completely worthwhile. I guess it's worthwhile also of the Unsolved Mysteries name, although it's a completely different creation.
Exactly.
And it's long.
Oh, it's so long. I found myself desperately searching for like a 1.25 times speed, you know, speed it up just a little bit. But
and that's us. That's our culture, right? We listen to podcasts and speed them up. We live in a BuzzFeed type of universe where we have top 10 lists with probably five things on it. And it's just, that's just, I guess, as a culture, who we are. And maybe this is a throwback to taking your time and everything. But you have to remember, I watch movies that were made in like 1915 that are 4 hours long. So I have patience for storytelling. I felt as though this dragged. That's all.
I was railed on coffee watching this because I started watching this at like 6:30 yesterday morning. And so I was like, that probably says more about me than it does about Unsolved Mysteries. But I just felt like they really could have summed it up faster. But like the first story.
All right. Yeah. Let's get into it. Sorry.
No. Is Ray Rivera. He was a man who was living in Baltimore. He had a friend from high school who like kind of lured him out to Baltimore to come work for his company. And he goes missing one day. And so they search on top of the Belvedere Hotel in Baltimore. And they find there's like this little church / conference room below that has like this tiny little hole in it. This hole looked like a foot and a half wide at most.
Yeah. And it probably was actually.
Yeah. And so they go into the church and they find his body there. And so we're like, okay, so he must have jumped, committed suicide maybe. Now, we find that the hole in the church was like too far away from the roof of the Belvedere. So it doesn't make sense that he would land where he landed if he jumped from the roof. It's like 45 feet out from the roof.
Like you'd have to be running probably about 20 miles per hour in order to get your 280-pound body above this spot.
Exactly. And they said there's like air ducts and all this stuff that he'd have to like bob and weave. And he's also wearing flip-flops. Now, they find his flip-flops by the hole and they find his cell phone and they're like, the cell phone is in complete working order. Like, yeah. We know that this was placed there. And you and I have the same thought of like, this is a brick phone. Those yeah. phones were indestructible.
Yeah, I said I washed my Razor phone back in whenever it was and it worked fine for a year afterward. You know, it was fine.
Yeah. And his phone was kind of like scratched up and maybe dented a little bit here and there. Like it did look worse for the wear. What I thought was incriminating was that his flip-flops were like torn where the thong part of the flip-flop is.
Yeah, that's and weird.
Yeah, and it looked like where his toes would be, there was drag marks. So it looks like, was he maybe thrown off of the roof?
I didn't like it when she was touching the flip-flops. I thought that this was something that was a really dark moment.
Ooh, yeah. No, it was harsh. And she was like showing
his
phone.
She seemed
like,
so sweet. I mean, they felt, honestly, just all the murder possibility or the suicide, these two seemed like they were really in love. And I really felt for them.
I love her, and I love her mission to bring peace to him. You know what I mean?
She doesn't seem bitter either. She just seems kind of beaten, but she just doesn't seem to have been... She hasn't become bitter from this.
Yeah, exactly. And so the medical examiner says that like the police are just instantly calling it a suicide, and his body is like... Basically, everything that can be broken is broken in his body, as is consistent with falling off the 11th floor or whatever of this building. So apparently something in his shins were broken in a way that was inconsistent with how he fell, which leads them to say maybe he was like beat up beforehand.
I don't buy it. Just because how many people get thrown off a roof maybe or jumped off a roof, falling through a metal roof? I mean, all of these other... variables need to be kind of put in, these things that don't normally happen to people.
And the thing is that they keep talking, he's like such a water polo player in high school. That's how he met his friend Porter, who kind of like lured him out to Baltimore.
Sounds rich.
And the hole in the roof looked almost as if you were to dive off. That's how thin it was.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I was thinking. Like I don't think it's possible for, let's say, two men to drag another man and chuck him 45 feet out.
In my head, I have this whole, like, slingshot type thing, but it's like, it's unrealistic.
Yeah, exactly, because you have to get through the hotel somehow. And they say, you know, he couldn't have gotten to the roof because there was all these doors that should have been locked and all these things to go through. So we later learn that he was... The wife's, like... amazing. And she's cleaning out his stuff and she is searching through every book, everything to try and find like a clue, basically. So she moves the computer and on the back of the computer, there is a note taped to it that just has the craziest list of rambling, just like lists of movies that he likes. It's shrunk down tiny. It's probably like 10 pages, but it's shrunk down to like 5 font.
You don't have these around your house? Maybe starting to. No, I don't either. Yeah. And I thought it was very, very strange. And she saw that it came from the same day because there were scraps or I guess other versions of it in the waste paper basket. Who calls it that? But the in the garbage. And it was just weird. She found that one of the lines, she just threw it into Google, hit up all of this kind of Freemason stuff. Now.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go down a rabbit hole, but a little bit of a rabbit hole. Everyone needs to go and search in their news, Google, or whatever they use, the number 33. 33 is the magic number, right? Not right, but 33 is a magic number. If you type 33 in the news right now, I'm going to guarantee that the news is reported on so many different things that have happened yesterday, a week ago, a month ago, with the number 33 in it. It's everywhere. So my wife was watching this and she goes, didn't you just see that on the, cause I'm trying to convert her into my weird bubble. And she goes right there, you know, on the third thing, when she Googles it, she's like, it says 33. So I found it and it's all of this Freemason Illuminati stuff.
Ooh.
Yeah. And it, I'll put a link to the page that they didn't go to. But it was kind of interesting. It's very, very out there. It's like, holy cow, I can't believe this might have been the clue that the producers put out there. for people to find. Because I feel as though each episode has one of these.
No, you read my mind. When I heard this thing about the Freemasons, I was like, here we go. This is why this is on Unsolved Mysteries and not just like a Dateline or something. So,
but it didn't go anywhere.
No, really. Well, or does it? Like, yeah. I feel like it's kind of like a shout out to armchair detectives. Like, help us figure this case out. So apparently Porter, the guy who he worked with, was like a stockbroker type guy. And Ray Rivera comes in and he is like cleaning up the company's reputation. They're in deep with like some Russian company or something
God.
And so his wife says like the day before they disappeared at 1 a.m., the security alarm went off and Ray comes down with like a baseball bat and he is like terrified, as any of us would be if our security alarm went off. But the next Tuesday, again at 1 a.m., the window had been tampered with and the security alarm goes off.
Now, was that the same? Was that a day before he went and disappeared?
I think they said the next Tuesday was the day he disappeared, and that's when the alarm went off.
I rewound it, and I couldn't figure out what she was talking about, in timeline-wise. And you know what? This is a show that deals with timelines so beautifully. They drop the ball on this one little detail.
Yeah, they show us, like, on the screen a timeline.
Oh, it's
like,
beautiful. Yeah.
It is. And even when they were showing us, like, the scenarios of the angles that he would have to jump from the hotel, I was like, wow, this is produce. Like, this is very well done.
It's almost as good as Unsolved Mysteries Rewind. Almost as good.
Well, with a little less police corruption, Unsolved Mysteries Rewind. One detective on the homicide department, the one guy who thought that this was not a suicide, was like magically transferred to another department.
Yeah.
And I thought that was very convenient.
I also think it's very convenient that Stansberry, the company that Ray worked for, on the day of his death, immediately went across the board with the company and put a gag order in place. Mm-hmm. So none of the employees, none of the people that worked with Ray could speak about positive or negative. It's just, you're not allowed by law. And
yeah,
I felt that is incredibly strange. I don't know if corporate wise, if that's something that companies do. I don't know.
Imagine.
Is it possible this goes a lot further and we're talking about some type of government secrets or something, because this whole thing has so much strange secrecy to it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of left not knowing too much. We don't have a next step. No update.
Yeah. Hopefully we will have an update, though. The second story, which I think we're probably most likely to have an update to, because everyone on the internet has been like, the husband did it. We are in Georgia.
I just think he's a jerk, you know.
I do too. No, I think he is such a scumbag. There was one part that I was like, I threw some expletives out. Like, what did I just hear?
Just so, one? There had to have been three times I can think of in the top of my head where this guy is teaching me to be a better parent.
Well, yeah. No, this guy was the worst. So
yes.
We have Pistol Black. And yes, that is his real name.
That's awesome.
His mother. Oh, badass. He is so cool.
But it's a cool name until you're older. I would imagine if your name is Pistol in kindergarten, it's a little bit weird.
Yeah, well, that's true. He tells us of his mother's disappearance. He's in 10th grade in 2004, and his mom, Patrice, drops him off at school. And he gets pulled out of class, and he tries calling his mom, no answer. His mom is a hairstylist. And her husband, Rob Endress, helped her open her own salon. And he's like 20 years older than her.
At first, I thought there was no issue here, right? I mean, I just, like, all right, you know what? He's 20 years older. I mean, okay. But I mean, they didn't go right into the fact that this guy is like kind of a lunatic.
Yeah, creepy, controlling.
Yeah. Ugh.
So a client shows up at the hair salon. Patrice isn't there. When the police arrive, because the client calls 911, the cash register's open and her lunch is sitting by the microwave. Now, there is no sign of struggle, but the police are on this case. They are like, this is a crime scene. They have it all taped off and everything, because the only sign that anything is even amiss is the fact that her car was like pulled in front of the building when it's usually parked next to the side of the building. Oddly, 2 weeks before she disappeared, she and Pistol were like driving to school and she was like, Pistol, what would happen to you if I were to just disappear one day? And Pistol's like, oh, I guess I'd live with my dad. And that was it. So,
feed the chickens. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I was like, oh, chickens.
Yeah, I thought, but I was thinking of you. I'm like, I'm wondering if she's going to go out now and feed those chickens.
Well, At 11:30, she ends a call with a client on her cell phone. And at 11:50, a call comes in on the shop phone and it goes unanswered. So that's where we get the title of 13 minutes from.
I don't think it's a great title.
Yeah, no, me neither. But
yeah, I think this could have been much better. We don't know. Yeah, I just don't. Personally, as soon as I learned that's where the 13 minutes came from, I didn't really care for it too much.
And not for nothing, she's on her lunch break. Maybe she just didn't feel like answering the phone at 11:50. But
I have one other glaring detail, which I might have missed me, but I rewound it and I couldn't figure it out. When Pistol is first asked to call his mother, why?
Yeah.
Why are they asking him to call the mother?
I'm assuming because the client showed up and police are involved and stuff, and they said she's not here. So maybe Pistol can get a hold of her because you know she's not going to ignore her kids' phone calls.
So it just seems weird to me that she's missing for what? An hour?
Yeah.
And they're pulling his kid out of class for it? I mean,
yeah.
Just seems a little bit weird to me.
They acted very fast, and they specifically said that they're not. Yeah, and they're not telling us all the information that there is out there about this case so that the person who's guilty will, you know, they can suss out who's guilty. So maybe that's one of the things. But we do know that at 11:45, two witnesses notice either a blue Chevy Lumina or a Ford Taurus / Malibu. Yes. So pulled like into the shop, like with the hood right maybe 2 feet away from the door. And one witness says that she sees two women with hands on each other, but the other witness says that he thinks it's a man with shoulder length hair.
Yeah. Now, I mean, this is a weird thing because they just kind of see, they're noticing it. It's one of these things they saw for 2 seconds.
I know. And I feel so bad for that witness because she was like, why didn't I do anything? I cried myself to sleep. Like, it's not your fault, lady. Nobody blames you. I feel so bad for her. But, we learned that when Pistol was like 8 or 9, his mom got married with Rob, and it was like a constant power struggle between him and his new stepdad. And Ron is described as like controlling, jealous, even over her relationship with her son.
Yeah, which is
Okay, maybe this is the son's point of view, but no, Rob tells the camera like, oh, I hated that kid and I still hate him today.
Right, like, to the end. Seriously.
Yeah.
It is crazy.
It is so crazy. And Pistol said, like, you know, she was talking about divorcing him before she went missing. And the day after she went missing, Rob, the husband, changed all the locks on the door. And he's like, well, you know, if somebody was after me and my family, I had to change the locks on the door. But he said that Pistol couldn't even get any of his clothes, anything like that. And Rob says, well, I didn't want Pistol in the house because I just don't like
him. I just don't like my stepson. Holy moly. Another thing I want to just mention, that Rob is in this a lot, and Rob just seems to me to be genuinely a really hurt person, but seems really nice. Seems like kind of a straight shooter, and I really feel for him. I really do. I think his relationship with his mother is really...
You're talking about Pistol.
I'm talking about Pistol. I'm sorry. Backward. Pistol is in it a lot, and he seems really nice, and... His relationship with his mother is just seems to be textbook really solid. Like, it just, it really, they seem to really, really have more than a kinship, you know. But I just feel as though he's being so sincere here, and he just seems like he's been through a lot. And he's older now. I mean, the guy, he's probably in his early 30s or something.
Yeah, but he's my age. No, he's my exact age because I was a sophomore in 2004, too.
kids.
But
yeah, he just seems nice. And I just feel like I think they convey that very, very well.
It seems like it was always him and his mom against the world. Like those two, like I feel like her son came first, as he should. But that's when I first noticed that they dropped an F-bomb on there. I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I rewound it and I was like, okay, we're going to get some cussing, which I am a huge fan of cussing. It just took me by surprise.
It's a little jarring sometimes in documentaries for me, but you know,
I would definitely. Yeah, I was not expecting it. But, you know, we get a few guys who are serial killers in the area, and police talk with them, and these guys confess to killing. Well, one guy confesses to killing to her, but he later recanted his confession. So we fast forward to 2005. Patrice's skull is located, and it's like way out in the woods. And so Pistol and Patrice's friends say that they both think that Rob did it. And Rob is like, bragging about how he went to like criminology school, right? And how he has receipts all time stamped and stuff. And he's like, trust me, I know the husband always does it. And I got my time stamped receipts. It's like, okay.
Yeah, I don't think he did it. I still don't. I just think he's a jerk. I just think he's a real monster. And I mean, they go through so many different scenarios of possibilities. It just doesn't seem to me. I don't know. There seems to be a lot of this stuff, and this is where Unsolved Mysteries kind of falls into what they used to do back in the 80s and 90s, where when a woman tries to leave a relationship, you say this all the time, it's the most dangerous time to be with them.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a scenario that I think they're trying to really bring home. She said to somebody that she wasn't happy anymore. I don't know that there's any evidence of that. Was there?
No, well, you know, Pistol said that there was divorce on the line. I think she told her sister she's not happy, but there's no, like, proof that she said that.
Yeah, there's no, like, legal separation. There's no other bank accounts that we know of. And it just, it falls into that category pretty easily. I felt like Rob's eyes were all bloodshot and welling up sometimes.
Everyone said online that he was fake crying because that's not how real people cry. And
I don't know. That,
but and a lot of people said it was creepy of him to sleep with the ashes. I personally don't think that's creepy of him to sleep with the ashes. What I do think is creepy is that he refuses to give Pistol any of the ashes. And here's my number one, like, what did I just hear moment. So the police comb the woods. They find, like, most of her bones. It's been 20 months and, you know, animals and insects and stuff. So it's just bones at this point. So Rob goes to the funeral home and he's like, lay her body out for me so I can see her assembled. Reassembled is the word.
Yeah, I hated the word. He could have used any other word. Buy a thesaurus, old man.
Yeah. He was like, basically, put her back together. Let's see what I got. So they're like, okay. So they do. They lay her out, you know, rib over here, her legs over here, whatever. So Rob says that they left him alone with her and he, quote, carried her head around for a while.
And kissed it. Now, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to judge somebody who's gone through something so horrible. Because I think that this is something that would really, really screw with your head in so many different ways.
Sure.
I think sleeping with the ashes, I think that it was, I think it was a lie because he barely knew where the ashes were.
Mm-hmm.
When everyone made a big deal about it, like a teddy bear, I was expecting the ashes to be inside of a teddy bear.
Yeah, because they do that sometimes.
Oh, really? I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, we love our spouses, right? I mean, God forbid something were to happen to them. I would,
knock on wood.
We would want, yeah, seriously. And, It just seems like we would want that moment again. And you'll take it under any circumstances. So I'm not going to judge him for doing something that can be perceived as completely batshit crazy. Sorry for cursing. On the outside, you know, but when until you're in a situation like this, I cannot imagine that any of it all goes out the window, I would imagine.
I agree with you. And I do agree with you that I would totally, God forbid, if my husband were to die, I would totally cuddle with his ashes. I would do all that stuff. I don't think I would carry his head around at the funeral home and, like, talk to it and kiss it and stuff. Like, that's just me.
It's such a cute head, though.
I mean, I
agree. No, I have to agree. I just don't, I'm just not going to judge somebody for doing something so crazy. And it is crazy.
Let me throw this out at you. Hypothetically, of course, allegedly, is that a way to justify why his fingerprints are on it or something? Like, I don't know.
It's a good point, but I don't think the fingerprints would be on the bones.
Yeah, we're definitely past that point. But yeah, so everybody online, the general consensus is like, let's look into this Rob guy. I agree. Everybody grieves differently. You can't judge guilty or innocent by how someone grieves, but I can judge, like, what the hell about how he grieves. Like, I'm not going to say
the
he's
son
guilty.
Something. He could put it in, like, a necklace or something, or ornate, and say, you know what? I know I've been a terrible father, but I know it's a nothing gesture, but it's something. Sorry.
Ugh,
sorry for being such
so
a
bitter.
Jerk. You know, it's like, you don't even need to have anything to do with it. You can give it to somebody, a third party, and do it. So, yeah, I just think that it's the guy seems super, super selfish.
And more than what it, and then it's what Pistol would want, is I genuinely believe that it's what Patrice would want.
Oh, there's no doubt about it.
Some of his her ashes. So we do get to the French story, and it is a good story. Like I said, I've heard it before. I've heard podcasts where they cover this story. So
we have to put in the beginning of this episode, the spoilers are abound.
Oh, yeah. That's a great idea. But so just the cliff notes on this version. We're in Nantes, France. And it's this sleepy little neighborhood. There's lots of royalty. Yeah. It looked adorable. Yeah. We meet this guy, Xavier. He is a businessman and a count. And we have a mother, Agnes. She is the Catholic school teacher. They have four gorgeous children. 20-year-old Arthur.
Whole family. I mean, aside from the guy with the bad tooth, they're just a great-looking family.
Yeah. I'm going to Americanize these names, so sorry, but we have Arthur, who's 20, Thomas, who is 18, Anne, who is 16, and Benoit, who is 13. On April 11th of 2011, their neighbor passes by and sees a note on the mailbox that just says, return to sender all of the mail, and the house is completely shuttered up. So the neighbor's like, this is unusual. The kids were lively. The one kid had like a drum set. Like, I should be hearing these people and I'm not hearing them. So she calls the police on the 13th. And basically the police start showing up like every single day to check this house out. From April 9th to the 14th, letters began arriving to his friends and family that Xavier and Agnes are like secret DEA spies, yeah, and they've transferred to the U.S. So don't come looking for them. Like, it's top secret.
But this is like an 8-page typed letter.
Yeah.
So crazy.
Yeah. And we get like a brief history in the 70s and the 80s. Oh, apparently he met his... Yeah, he met his wife back in the 80s. He wanted to, like, you know, sow his seed. So he went all over, and she did too. And she was pregnant when he came back. So Arthur is not biologically his son, but he basically adopts this kid, gives him his last name, raises him as his own. So police are showing up every... Well, not great, because on April 21st, like 10 days after the police started, or after suspicions were risen, they notice something odd under the terrace, so they start digging, and they find a whole bunch of bodies wrapped up in garbage bags and tape. And the families are Agnes, Arthur, and Benoit, Thomas, and the two dogs.
The two dogs. So, that was, I don't know why. And this goes back to a Michael Moore documentary that I saw years and years ago, where this guy is getting shot in the street, and then it follows up by somebody skinning a rabbit, and you forget that you even saw the guy getting shot in the street, because you feel so bad for the animal. Well, you know, we don't care about people, it seems. We care about the animals, and these two dogs, I don't know, just it really, really hit me.
I hear you there. I know a lot of people are going to be like devastated about that, but yeah, I mean, let's we forget like a 13-year-old child was also
No. Like, it's heinous. It's terrible. It's just, why the dogs? Just let them go. Like, what are they going to tell on you? It's not Scooby-Doo.
I'm guessing they're going to be barking, maybe. I don't know. And with Family Annihilators, you're like wiping everybody out so you can just start all over again.
Give them more sleeping pills or something.
Exactly. Well, we learn that everybody but Xavier is dead, is buried. So neighbors never heard any gunshots, no traces of blood, no DNA or fingerprints, like completely clean crime scene. Yeah. So we learned that from 2001 to 2011, he is in, quote, a downward spiral of failure, and he is not the successful businessman that he claims to be. So January 20th, 2011, this is just a few months before the murders, his father dies, Xavier's father dies. So he's like, we are going to get that cash. Like, he is excited for the inheritance, basically. Turns out his father wasn't as successful as he said he was, and he actually left him with, like, debts instead of with assets.
Jeez.
Only thing that he takes from his father's stuff is a .22 caliber long rifle. And keep in mind, everybody, all his whole family was shot twice in the head with .22.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but nobody heard it. I still think that's so strange that nobody would hear it.
I do too. And keep in mind, it's like 3 o'clock in the morning, but I'm like, this is not America. So I would imagine that gunshots would be more alarming because it's like harder to get a gun overseas, you know.
And this isn't like where you live, it's not even like where I live, you know. These are houses that are kind of attached in a lot of ways. So, and these walls, I don't know, it just seems to me maybe people just don't get involved In France, you drink a lot of wine. Maybe everybody's drunk. I'm just kidding.
Smoke a whole lot of cigarettes too. Yeah. Oh my gosh, it was like I was like, that looks nice. But
I was wondering because I know that you were many moons ago. You were a smoker, and I'm wondering because you know the French tend to they're probably the last group on earth to glamorize smoking. I was always curious how that kind of affects somebody who is once a smoker.
I was a little bit like, damn, that sounds nice. But at the same time, I'm not about to start that whole chain again.
You just have a glass of red wine and call it a day.
Well, they like retrace his whole footsteps, basically, because on April 22nd, this is like 11 days after, they find Xavier's car in the parking lot of a hotel many, many miles away from the crime scene. So he is last seen crossing the hotel parking lot with a garment bag that they think that the 22 long rifle's in, and he's going towards the woods. So they have this huge like search for him because they think that he went to the woods to go kill himself, and he didn't. So they think that that was like a ruse and that he's still out there somewhere. So if you see him, contact the authorities.
Thank you for listening. This is the end of part one of our review of Unsolved Mysteries from Netflix. If you like what you're listening to, please leave a review. Tomorrow, I will be releasing part two to this, where we will be covering episodes 3 through 6. And if you want to get in on the conversation, please head on over to Facebook and give us a little search, Unsolved Mysteries Rewind. Apparently, there seems to be some debate as to a certain Friends character that I sound like. Sarah Bailey, if you're listening, I don't know what you're talking about.